From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Ebola. The World Health Organization has warned that the deadly Ebola virus was spiraling out of control in West Africa and could spread to other countries, causing catastrophic loss of life. The warning came from the head of the WHO, Margaret Chan, said that the epidemic was moving faster than their efforts to control it. And efforts to evacuate two seriously ill American Ebola patients from Africa well underway now, with a plane flying to Liberia, planners hoping to bring them separately to the United States within days. Nancy Wrightball and Dr. Keith Brentley, who were infected with this deadly virus while treating Ebola patients in Liberia last month, have been in serious condition there for days. Just two of the more than 1,300 people believed sickened in the worst Ebola outbreak in recorded history. We have an Instapoll going on for you now at coasttocoastam.com. Go up there. It's in the highlight reel and simply vote. As of right now, it is overwhelming. When we ask the question, should we allow the American Ebola patients into the country? No, dramatically high. Just go ahead and vote. We'll take a look at this poll later on in the night as well. Israeli forces are searching for a soldier believed captured as a 72-hour truce with Hamas in Gaza collapsed just hours after it began. The soldier disappeared when Israeli forces trying to destroy a suspected militant tunnel were attacked. Two soldiers died in the firefight there in the southern Gaza Strip. The Gaza Health Ministry said at least 53 people killed by Israeli shelling shortly after the incident. Jerome Corsi's been with us since this incursion has begun. Jerry, no end in sight. They can't even get a 72-hour truce going.
Really disappointing, George, that it didn't last longer and that the fighting broke out again. What it shows is the tunnel network that Hamas has is much more sophisticated, I believe, than Israel realized at the beginning of this incursion. And the Hamas activists are very effective at using these tunnels. Had they not been destroyed, I believe that beginning of the Jewish New Year in September, these tunnels would have been used to launch a massive attack with terrorists from Hamas popping up in the middle of Israel.
And Jerry, with the situation right now, as tense as it is, Netanyahu is saying, you know, almost enough is enough. What's left? I mean, what can Israel do other than what they're doing right now? That's ground forces and bombing everything they can.
Well, this, I think, is going to take time to get effectively all the tunnel networks because they appear to be very extensive and very well engineered. So Israel is probably going to take at least another couple of weeks to get all the tunnels fully investigated and destroyed. And the patience, I think, of the world community for this conflict continuing is going to wear thin as casualties build, and casualties in the Gaza among the Palestinians is growing. So it's a very dangerous situation. The U.S. Congress just voted today, before it adjourned, some $225 or $50 million for Israel to rearm its Iron Dome missile defense project. So it looks to me like this conflict is not anywhere near over yet, despite urgent attempts of the international community to get a ceasefire that will last.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. You can track Jerry's work by going to WND.com. You know, our campaign, of course, is about to begin. I'll tell you about that in just a second. It's only a matter of time before a catastrophic eruption on the surface of the sun hurtles towards the planet with devastating consequences. The Earth could be the target of an explosion equivalent, they say now, to 10 billion Hiroshima bombs exploding at the same time. Scientists warn that communication systems will be crippled. Vital services such as transport, sanitation, medicine will close, and loss of power will plunge the planet into darkness. Ashley Dale is a member of the International Task Force of Solar Max, set up to identify the risks of a solar storm. Ashley says without power, People would struggle to fuel their cars at petrol stations, get money from cash dispensers, or simply pay anything online. Beginning Monday, we will begin our national campaign to get the grid insulated. We are doing this in conjunction with WorldNet Daily, WND.com. We will, throughout the next several weeks and months ahead, pound away at this with special guests like Michael Maloof and William Forstchen. William Forstchen, of course, wrote the book One Second After. Mr. Maloof, A Nation Forsaken. We are not going to stop until we get some kind of federal legislation enacted to fix the grid, which everyone is estimating would cost $1 to $4 billion, which I've always said with what they spend in Washington is chump change. This would dramatically change the way we live, and it's just a matter of time that a solar flare or perhaps an EMP attack in the atmosphere will just render our grid useless. We've got to fix it. So beginning Monday, with our national rollout, you'll begin hearing a lot of this all around the country. We are starting our campaign. We're going to get this going. Too many people right now are jumping on board, and that's good, like Ashley Dale from the SolarMax Task Force. Peter Singer, a major hedge fund investment advisor, warned just last week that an EMP attack or a solar flare could be devastating. People are beginning to wake up, and we're going to push this until we get somebody in Congress or a group of people in Congress with the president to simply say, these people are right, and we got to fix this. There is a story at coasttocoastam.com, mysterious lake in Tunisia. It's in a desert. There was nothing there. And then in a blink of an eye, there was a huge lake there. Some people are calling it a miracle. Other people calling it a curse. Nobody really knows what happened. In Cleveland, animal control officers are working to remove approximately 300 rats from an Ohio studio apartment and will put them up for adoption around the country. Apparently, the owner was evicted. He had all these rats in there, and he finally called the Humane Society and said, somebody needs to go and get them. NASA's next Martian rover will attempt to make oxygen on the surface of the red planet when it lands there in 2021. This could support human life or make rocket fuel for return missions. That's exciting. And, of course, it's Friday night. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with his weekly update. And, Peter, did you get any reports about something around Toronto at all this week?
I've gotten so many reports, George, it's hard for me to keep them all straight. But, yes, I did receive one very good report from Toronto. I don't remember the date off the top of my head, but it was a very good report, and a very serious-minded person or people reported it.
What do you got going for us this week?
Boy, there's so many reports, George, I don't even know where to turn to choose the good ones. Ordinarily, I'd start off by saying, thank God it's Friday, but this month has been, every day has been just like the other. They've gone by like a blur. We received 1,200 reports during the month of July. We just posted them. Our hardworking webmaster got them up on the website tonight in preparation for this appearance. 1,000 of them for the month of July. That's almost a record, George. But a couple really good reports. Last night, the 31st of July at 10:30 p.m. East Coast time, a gentleman who's a military retiree was driving back to his home very near Delaware, Dover, Delaware. This is probably not more than 5 or 6 miles to the west of Dover Air Force Base, a major Air Force Base back there. He looked up ahead of him, his car, as he faced the north. There was a brilliantly, blindingly bright emerald green light that was strobing about once every 2 seconds or so, he estimated. He was so intrigued, he stopped his car, he got out, stood beside his car on the side of the road, and the object proceeded to jink or jump all over the night sky.
Huh.
It moved to the west of him. It descended behind a row of trees. He estimated not more than half a mile away. He believes it set down in a field just on the west side of Route 15. Should get some investigators out there to see if they can find any kind of trace of it. About 2.5 hours later, out in Coos Bay, Oregon, out on the Oregon coast, a gentleman pulled into his driveway with his young son. They saw an orange-yellow object straight ahead of them, about 45 degrees up in the northern sky. It was descending. Suddenly, it split into two. The guy said it looked like a lava lamp splitting into two, and it had some sparks between the two parts. His son got so scared, he ran inside into the house. The gentleman stood there and watched it descend. It went behind a row of trees, and suddenly two flashes of light in the night sky. And the night before, Wednesday night, Kanaloa, Hawaii, northeast of Honolulu, a woman was putting her dogs to bed, saw a bright red object go streaking up the coast of Oahu. Lots going on, and all those reports are posted to our website, George. And
the UFOCenter.com, Peter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. He watches those skies for us and does a great job doing it. Up next, the High Priestess joins us as we talk about witchcraft on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast this Friday night into Saturday morning. I'm George Norrie, Lady Shadow with us, metaphysical Wiccan practitioner, high priestess, tarot card reader, very experienced practicing white witchcraft for a number of years. She is the founder of the Divinity Wiccan Coven in New York City, then is a community leader that follows, practices, and teaches metaphysical Wicca, as well as being a mentor for new witches. She's a paranormal investigator as well, and here she is on Coast to Coast. Hello, Lady Shadow.
Hi, George. It is such an honor to speak with you this evening. Thank you so much for having me on.
You too. And you're a high priestess, so what is that exactly?
Well, George, a high priestess is a woman Wiccan practitioner that takes the time, energy, and resources, and who is dedicated to constantly honing, harnessing, and working her craft, both to improve herself, her knowledge, and her community, all while being open about who she is and what she's capable of. And she knows how to express that, especially in a leadership role, naturally. She must be responsible, caring, sympathetic, patient, and kind, of course, and also very focused and organized. A high priestess is very similar to the leader of a congregation of a church, except that, of course, we don't have a church. And we actually don't even have one leader as a Wiccan. So just to let you know, too, that all Wiccan practitioners are technically labeled priests and priestesses. But how far or how high you want to take your leadership role is really up to you. And I took that role on, of course. As the high priestess of my coven, I'm mainly responsible for creating and carrying out rituals appropriate for an occasion, overseeing the dynamics of our coven mates, diplomacy within our group. We create altar tools. I create a lot of the magic spells for the coven, and we do healing mind treatments and guided meditations, that kind of thing. It's a pretty tall order, George, to take on, so you have to be really ready for lots of work if you do it.
And a lot of people, Lady Shadow, think of witchcraft in Wicca as being evil. I try to correct them as much as I can. It's not, you know, Satanists, and you're not doing a black mass. You believe in God, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And we do not acknowledge in any way an actual devil or a Satan, George, as some would call him, anywhere in this physical life or after. Wicca is in no way associated with the conjuring of demons or using evil spirits for any purpose whatsoever, not even in magic, believe it or not. We do believe that there are negative energies out there, and we need protection from them often, but it's not Satan himself. We don't even believe technically in a place called hell, per se, which is, of course, managed by the so-called devil. But if anything, George, we subscribe to the fact that hell is actually a virtual mindset that we put ourselves in when we become a slave to our egos and our emotions can't temporarily reach our default, all-loving nature that we're supposed to be able to access at any time. Now, I know personally some people who call themselves Wiccan and do call upon dark entities and maybe even Satan himself, whoever he is, and use black magic in their ritual spells. But those, once again, are really not true Wiccans and misrepresent what a true Wiccan really is. And unfortunately, the few bad apples can spoil our reputation.
Well, that's true. And have you had people get you confused for what I just mentioned?
I do. But I'm open about who I am, and I'm not afraid to educate someone who comes along with questions about, you know, the adornments or the jewelry that I wear. I wear a pentacle naturally, and unfortunately, a Satan worshiper will just kind of turn that pentacle a few degrees around to make it into what's called a pentagram, which is really a completely different symbol, and that doesn't represent a Wiccan at all.
You call yourself a white witch. Now, what is that compared to a regular witch?
Well, it's really pretty, there's not a big difference. Actually, a regular witch and a white witch are technically the same thing. The problem is, because of the bad reputation that we've received, you know, through the media, through television and movies, that we have gotten this bad image, this reputation of being dark, mysterious, manipulative, and negative. So what I like to try to do is educate people that a white witch and a witch are really the same exact thing. I just use a simple word association with putting white in front of it to show that we are, as Wiccans, really a truly loving group of people and really only use the power of love in ourselves.
How did you become a witch?
Well, years ago, back in the 90s, I was studying several religions, and I wandered into a shop in Los Angeles, actually, over there in the valley off of Ventura Boulevard, and I picked up a tarot card witch's deck, and I just really fell in love with the imagery on the cards, and I thought, you know, this is really fascinating, this witchcraft idea, and I started studying it on my own, and once the internet kind of became a household commodity, because when I was studying early on, there was no internet.
No.
And,
no.
So it became much easier to find other practitioners as I was able to get online with everyone else. And as I did, one by one, I learned that others were more than happy to come together and not just share stories about how we all practice, but, you know, as much as I was ambitious to form a coven, I found so many people that were just as ambitious to become a part of a coven. I started my website about 2008, I think it is, and I use it as a local and a worldwide gathering place for Wiccans to kind of come together and connect.
And what do you do together in this coven? I mean, do you pray? Do you cast spells? What do you do?
We do all kinds of things, George. It's actually really anticlimactic compared to, again, what
really?
Hollywood has.
Nothing juicy here, huh?
Nothing that juicy, no. A few of us go a little skyclad under the full moon once in a while, but that's not all of us. it's in New York City. It's tough to do, as you could imagine.
Sure.
So I and my cousin Maple, we get together regularly for esbits, which are the rituals and ceremonies to celebrate the moon phases. For instance, right now, we're in a waxing crescent phase, which is a dark into a full moon. And this is a great time for drawing things close to you, like a new job, a new home, increasing something like a raise at your job. And aside from the moon day celebrations, many times we don't even need a reason to hold a ritual. A fellow witch may need some random specific guidance or healing. We may cast a circle, just for grounding, stress relief, answers in a meditation for, you know, a problem that comes up. Hey, let's get together and fix this together. And then we celebrate your standard pagan holidays. In fact, today, August 2nd, Eastern time, is Luna, which is a pagan holiday. It's our kind of midsummer holiday. And that's a great time to learn new skills, new jobs, a time to appreciate hard work, that kind of thing.
What do your neighbors say? I mean, do they know what you do?
some of them do. What's interesting is I had the cable guy over here a few days ago.
Ah, the cable guy, the old cable guy.
Yeah, and when I have people in my apartment, because my altar is set up, I'm in New York City, I have a 700 square foot apartment that's, you know, pretty compact, And I have my altar set up in the windowsill. And so I forget that when people come in and they look over, oh, you know, they're probably thinking, what is that? You know, I forget that it probably needs a little explanation to demystify, you know, what's going on in the corner over there. But it's nothing scary. It's I have a beautiful doll there, and I have candles and a statue and, you know, a cauldron. Nothing. It's all very benign. The tools that we work with.
Okay, we're going to talk about spells with you, Lady Shadow, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lady Shadow with us. She is the High Priestess, the White Witch, and you were telling us a little bit about the cable guy. Did you finish that story, Lady?
Yes. Everything went smooth, and he didn't wasn't afraid to run out of the house or finish the job. He didn't actually even ask me what it was all about. It was pretty painless. But I saw him looking over, which most people do, and yeah. That's fine. Everybody's allowed to worship the way they'd like to. And I don't judge other people for their path. And I love it when people don't judge me for mine. It's just that kind of simple.
What kind of spiritual tools do you use in witchcraft?
Well, if I could explain to you the difference between the metaphysical Wicca that I practice and kind of traditional Wicca, then I can kind of explain the tools that we use. And traditional Wicca is generally exactly the same thing. It's just that, you know, times have changed and we understand now the correlation between mind and body and universe and how we can connect with that together. Back in the old days, you know, people worship deities out of the sky and animals and statues, and they thought that was the way to the gods, for instance, and that they needed to connect with that to get there. But with Wicca, I believe that the goddess and the one intelligent source that you would, for instance, call God, I would call the goddess, resides in all of us. And so what I do is I tap into that without using a third-party deity. So metaphysical Wicca, which is my expertise, is using a lot of mind-to-manifestation techniques, using the law of attraction, the principles of the science of mind, which I'm sure you've heard of, the amazing literary text by Ernest Holmes. And we use that by meditating, mm-hmm. aromatherapy, visualization, being creative, open and honest about our needs and desires, about, you know, just being human beings and the things that we want out of this life. And so metaphysical Wicca kind of taps into the power of the universe that resides in us as mini gods and goddesses that we are, and using the ritual, alongside of that, it blends everything together to kind of bring into your life what you want.
Do you teach people how to be witches?
Well, I mentor people. Per se. So I've been getting a lot of emails, of course, this week about questions about the path and how to get on the path. And, mm-hmm. I'm drawn to it. Someone's drawn to it. And, you know, how do I get there? And it's something that you have to come to terms with, that I'm not out to recruit witches by any means. And so when someone is drawn to the path, they often seek me out or seek out one of my coven mates. And there are a lot of questions. And maybe this is somebody that's probably been researching on their own through a book or through the internet at first before they get in contact with us. And then when they actually want to take it to the next level, we often will meet with them and maybe bring them into one of our open rituals, maybe just a moon celebration, something really easy and benign and not scary at first for newbies that are coming into it. And then if they want to take it a step further, then sometimes we induct them into our coven, and other times they'll go off and continue to practice solo. The other thing, I actually offer a Wiccan course online that you can take at my website, soulsandspirits.com. And it's really for people of all levels of practice. I've even had high priestesses from all over the world order my course, and just to kind of brush up. And it's also a personal empowerment course. It's not just about, hey, learn witchcraft in 366 self-paced lessons. It's much more than that. So there are several ways to kind of learn the path. And there are several ways to use it in your life and to, you know, kind of implement the spirituality that it requires to you know, bring harmony to what you're looking for.
What kind of magic do you practice? And what kind of spells, if any, do you do?
Well, we do spells. In fact, I heard your show the other night about the voodoo show. Was interesting.
Very interesting, yes.
Now, I personally have never done a voodoo spell, and everybody does spells differently, whether, you know, different cultures and even different Wiccans and different pagans, you know, the different sects and the covens and the groups of these people all have their own idea of what a spell is. For me, it is several things. It is really working the mental intention that is a result of a cause and effect used with metaphysics, such as the law of attraction. So the most basic of what, how to describe a magic spell is kind of what you will and what you think about, what you desire manifests through thoughts and actions. So everything in which you see in the physical world, as you know, first began as a simple thought and a vibration. And I and my coven mates and anyone who takes my course or hangs out with our group are only taught to use magic that is based in pure light and love. And I can't emphasize this enough, George. The spells we do are simply thoughts and desires put into a faith-based ritual of manifestation that's all love-based. And that's something that we kind of do every day, all of us. Whether you're, like, for instance, hoping for a nice, smooth flight from St. Louis, you're visualizing, okay, a nice, safe flight over to Los Angeles, and somebody who's hoping for a job that, you know, they know that there are 50 other applicants, wishing on the candle, on the birthday cake, is really the most simple form of magic spells, if you really think about it. So what we do is we take words with powerfully concentrated thoughts, in addition to a physical ritual.
Well, give us an example. Give us an example.
I will. I just wanted to kind of explain exactly how it works, and then I can kind of explain the ritual, absolutely. But yeah, you're tapping into love, which is the highest vibration in the universe. And with love, you're always going to have the highest, most perfect outcome for everyone involved. So we don't play with negativity. We don't play with manipulation of others. We don't try to get revenge on anyone. Light and love absolutely heals everything. And so why would you use any other kind of magic in the universe? Because there's nothing more powerful than using love.
That's no fun, lady. You don't do anything evil at all, do you?
Nothing evil. And I don't sacrifice animals, and we don't, you know, dump blood all over ourselves. And it's the most peaceful and beautiful and enlightening religion that you can really think of, next to, you know, pretty much all the religions that people bask in their joy with. But a spell would be, you know, taking those loving, powerful intentions. Let's say you want to find romantic love. Okay, so what we'll do is we will gather magic tools for a, quote, attract love ritual. And that would kind of consist of dried rose petals, some cinnamon powder, some rose quartz, a few teaspoons of water, a red and pink candle with carvings of love symbols that you can actually create on the candle with a pen or a sharp tool. And you burn some rose oil incense, and you would take up a prayer or a poem or a love letter that you've created, and you speak some positive affirmations. You light your candles, you get your incense going, and you kind of visualize what's happening with that love situation as if it's already happened. It's very similar to the law of attraction and the secret. You know, you see it happening as if it's like right in front of you, because as you know, the brain can't tell the difference between what's happening in your thoughts and versus in reality. So you're tricking your brain into believing that you already have something coming to you, and then you of course bless the universe and thank the god and goddesses, and then of course the god and goddess within, and you carry on and you kind of wait for your magic to happen.
Well, it sounds like you tap into something in the universe for this incredible power.
You do. And as part of that is knowing who you are and knowing what you want and having the most limited amount of chaos in your life possible so that the good things can flow in. And when we get rid of drama and clutter and toxic relationships, we can really center ourselves at any time, anywhere. You could be in the line at the bank or the DMV, and you could center yourself and do a quick love spell or a money spell, just by tapping into the thought of the joy that you need at that moment to get you out of your frustration. And tapping into that love and joy will attract whatever you need to yourself, whether in that minute or a week later or a month later. You know, we're in a physical world, and we're spiritual beings, as you know. So often we have to be patient in waiting for sometimes our magical manifestations to show up, because there's that, you know, slower vibration going on in the earthly world. So sometimes a spell can happen literally the next day, sometimes the next hour, but sometimes it takes a month or two or three to show up.
Do you need to have materials for any specific kind of spell, or do you just do it?
No, you could do both, actually, George. I like to have materials on hand because it only enhances the experience. You know when they say that you will remember something better if you write it down, or the power of a love letter, or the power of a thank you note, right?
Yeah.
So if you are tapping into taking something out of your mind and putting it onto paper, you're already sending it out into the universe, this higher intent that goes beyond thought and mental intention, but now it's a vibration that's moving into the physical world. So sometimes if you're doing a ritual that requires a little more work, or a spell that requires a little more money, or something that is just a little harder to hurdle yourself over, you would use ritual to kind of back up the mental intention that you want. But other times, like I said, you could be at the bank and you could just visualize yourself. Oh, you know, I'd like to, I'm $20 short with my deposit here. I need to find some more money and do a quick centering spell and just connect to the universe. It's nothing but abundance.
And so the,
abundance
so the,
is upon me.
So the person you're behind in line drops a 20 and leaves.
That's right.
But the right thing is to go up to them and say, hey, you dropped the 20, and maybe they will reward you or something, huh?
Of course, yes. Of course, honesty is always the best policy. Honesty, integrity, and love, George, I cannot stress enough. The Wiccan way are those three things. And, you know, our one rule is to harm none and do what thy will. But doing what thy will requires, you know, some responsibility, personal
sure.
responsibility, and being in the light as often as possible, and to heal things with love. And if we heal things with love, my gosh, we will get so much further than if we're out plotting revenge against someone, or, you know, walking around holding on to past hurts or hatred in our hearts. I mean, love is seriously the most powerful magic you can absolutely tap into, and I'm 100% behind that.
Tell us a little bit about the tarot cards that you designed.
Oh, yes. This is a 3-year project in the making, George.
Pretty cool.
If you check out my website, they're actually available for pre-order September 15th. They'll be shipping out. We've already got several orders in the queue. And I've designed them by hand, each and every one of them, 57 cards. That's 41 major arcana and 16 minor arcana. And they're designed as a combination of graphics, photography, and some of my own paintings, actually. And I kind of morphed them all together to make these very beautiful symbolic cards that represent all of the emotions in life and all the different personalities. And the deck is super easy for newbies who find tarot very complicated and, you know, having to memorize all the cards. Because actually on my major arcana, you've got the life emotion printed on the bottom. So you don't have to memorize anything crazy. You know, it's kind of all will visually come to you much easier. So it's great for beginners.
Will that death card, is that in there?
George, you know what questions to ask. You're so good at this.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I pondered putting a death card in there for months, actually, because, you know, it kind of belongs there, but it really intimidates a lot of people, especially those who are new to learning the cards. Or when you're reading for someone, it could be a beautiful reading, and the death card comes up, and then everyone gets scared, and then you ruin the vibe of the reading, when really the death card is actually a good card. It means rebirth, It means a new self of yours is emerging. And I did choose to leave the death card out because I didn't want to place upon my new readers that intimidation and have that kind of intent of being afraid of it. Because it's all about facing your sure. fears and you know. So I replaced the death card with a sorrow card.
I would guess people would freak out if they pull the death card.
Yes, and they do. And then I have to go back and reiterate the entire reading because I'm also a tarot card reader. And I have to go back and say, listen, but no, this is so positive. Like all these other cards here go together. And with the death card, this is just going to be a really big change for you. But it's not anything scary. But they just can't get the image out of their mind that it's a death card. So
how often are you a witch? In that, I mean, are you practicing it every moment of the day?
Not really, George. I mean, it's part of who I am, just like a Catholic or a Christian. It's part of their daily life is in their faith. Being a witch is part of my faith. So, it's just kind of my dormant being, my default being, if I'm not out practicing conjuring or meeting with my coven mates. But I live a pretty normal life as anyone else would. And the only thing that's maybe different about me is that I am a night owl. So I am up every night to hear Coast until 5 a.m., and that's when I go to
good
sleep. You'll be happy to know that. So I'm a night owl, so I keep strange hours, but that's just me. I'm a creative writer. I'm an artist, and I get more inspired at night, and I work better at night. And this is New York City, so when everyone else is sleeping, I got the world and the city to myself to really conjure and create what I need to do, and it's fascinating. But, yes, other than that, I live an amazing, beautiful, blessed life. Just like the average person, and I'm very proud of my faith and my past.
What do you do on Halloween?
Halloween is a really special time for us, actually. Actually, I do partake in the standard Halloween festivities. New York City has an amazing party here, and I'm famous for creating one-of-a-kind costumes by hand, completely original. So my friends and I will usually, we come up with crazy costumes and we spend like a month or two making them ahead of time. I'm going to be actually starting my costume probably in about 2 weeks. And we go out into the night and we entertain and sometimes we're in the parade here in New York City. We get our picture taken and, answer questions about our creativity. And then I come home and I generally do a ritual with a few of my select coven mates to kind of bring in the harvest, what they call the Samhain, or the Samhain is another way to pronounce it. But it's kind of my New Year.
Is this a growing community? Because I sense, Lady Shadow, that people are getting a little disenfranchised with religion.
It's true. I mean, I don't want to judge anyone else's path or religion because really a Wiccan's duty, George, first and foremost, is to bless all paths to God. And that's, I don't judge anyone. Like I said, I'm not out to recruit witches into my lifestyle. I bless everyone who has their own faith. And if that works for you, that is wonderful. What I do works for me. And we are all brothers and sisters, no matter what faith we are practicing, as long as we aren't harming each other. But Wicca is, believe it or not, the fastest growing religion in the world. And that's a reflective, I think, on not just the media and, the vampire shows. And there's, of course, the witchcraft movies that are coming out at least once a year or twice a year. But, I think that it's also that people are looking for something hands-on. People are looking for something creative. And instead of being told what to do and how to live, Wicca empowers people to create and imagine something themselves and kind of, navigate their own path and kind of make decisions for themselves and of course, be responsible and accountable to those decisions.
Okay, well, we're going to take phone calls with you, Lady Shadow, when we come right back. Plus, I've got a few more questions about what you do next on Coast to Coast AM.